You're listening to No Plot, Only Lore, a podcast about games and the tables we play them at. Your DMs tonight and every night are Josh and Chris. You can find us on all podcast platforms or check us out at noplotonlylore.com. If you like what you hear today, please rate and review the show and share it with everyone you've ever met. Welcome back to No Plot, Only Lore, Horn Hollow's favorite D&D podcast. Now, Christopher, I don't know if you're familiar with the town of Horn Hollow, but they are at center of the origin story for the famed Pipes of the Wheezing Dragon. You see, some years before the Year of the Griffin, the village of Horn Hollow was visited by a geriatric red dragon named Crom Straug. Now, the worm was afflicted by a terrible draconic cough. His wheezing and belching flames set the village on fire, and the inhabitants of Horn Hollow fled, fearing for their lives. Crom Straug perched at the center of town, unwilling to move. The people of Horn Hollow held a lottery to see who was to negotiate with the dragon, and a traveling minstrel whose welcome to the village had worn out, named Asni Freystrings, was the unlucky winner. Now, so Asni attempted... Asni Freystrings.
It's fantastic.
Asni attempted to cure the dragon's cough, but likely overestimated his knowledge of the local herbs, and his herbal remedy caused Crom Straug terrible vomiting. The belched flames immediately incinerated Asni Freystrings and several acres of the Wood of Sharp Teeth, but also, fortunately, took the life of this fragile creature. When Hollowhorn's inhabitants returned, they found Cromstrog's bones still sneezing and creaking even after his death. They subsequently sold the draconic corpse to a local wizard to be fashioned into what we now know as the famed Pipes of the Wheezing Dragon.
Okay, so all of that, when you first said Pipes of the Wheezing Dragon, the thing that popped into my head was Pauly Shore, circa 1995.
Oh, like The Wheeze?
The Wheeze. Just like wheezing some juice.
Yeah.
His weird horn of the dragon. Yep. Good.
No, I've never heard of these items either, but apparently... they let you like breathe fire in a couple of different ways several times a day. But also they are still constantly creaking and wheezing. So you are worse at like stealth and things like that.
That's hilarious. And I've literally never heard of that item. I think one of the fun things about choosing all of these like weird Faerun small towns is just how much we are learning about Faerun.
This is the dumb default setting that's just boring, and it's like, no, it's got plenty of its own weirdness, you just haven't dug deep enough.
And like, we're digging in some weird fucking corners at this
point. Oh yeah.
So we're getting the good stuff. Wheezing dragon pipes. Fantastic.
Yep. Made from a literal wheezing dragon.
Made from a literal wheezing dragon. And that's the kind of shit that's going to end up in like a D&D movie at some point. Right. Like the fact that Thembershod was a dragon in the Forgotten Realms before we got to see the fat roly dragon in the movie is just cherry on top. So fucking
beautiful,
good.
Beautiful deep cut.
Yeah. And also just like objectively hilarious. So well done D&D team. Do you watch TV ever? Is that a thing you do?
I used to watch a lot more than I do now. Frankly, we are in a golden age of TV. There's too much TV. But I do pick and choose some things every once in a while. If I want to I like to binge stuff while I'm working. So, if I'm working on, I do commissions for Warhammer stuff for people, just doing assembly for them. So if I have some kits to get through, then I'll put on something in the background to binge while I cut and sniff glue. So that is
where you and I differ. I also do binging, but I binge in the least healthy way possible.
less healthy way?
All right. So you and I have talked a little bit about The Bear.
Yes.
And how I have been watching The Bear.
You did just insanely binge The Bear. I did recently binge season 3, but I was like caught up. So.
Yeah. So like I started The Bear last week.
Yeah.
and I finished The Bear last week.
Yeah.
And that is the way that I binge stuff, is just like from the moment I get home, when I should be doing other things, right? Yeah. Like I feel like if you want to understand how the ADHD brain works, sometimes I get home, I see the mess in my kitchen, and I recognize that that is a thing that I need to deal with. I feel hunger in my belly, and I realize that's something that I need to deal with. I see projects that I am working on and things that I need to do all around me. And then I sit down and I watch The Bear for 7 hours.
Yep. Yeah, no, I feel that one. Been there, done that.
So that is exactly what I did with The Bear. I watched The Bear over the course of, I think, 5 days.
Yeah.
And would have been less than that if I didn't have to wake up in the morning.
Yeah, I'd go to work and be a functional, semi-functional human being.
Yeah, like the fact that there was a deadline is the only thing that kept this even a little bit healthy.
Yeah. No, you binged The Bear recently. I binged Kingdom.
You've been telling me to watch Kingdom, and
it's so good. It is Korean Shogun plus The Walking Dead.
That was the thing that kind of sold me on it, was that it is being compared favorably with Shogun. And like, yeah. Shogun just won every Emmy.
Yeah.
Like, well deserved more Emmys than anything.
This wasn't just like a fad thing. Like, they definitely earned those Emmys.
100%. Other than the fact that Jamie Lee Curtis won for like best guest and fucking deserved every second of that.
She's a nightmare on The Bear, but I love her for it.
Oh, so good. She plays the friend mom, or my friend's mom. I have friends, and she is just their mom.
Yeah.
And it's really uncomfortable to watch for me, because, that, like, I recognize that
chaotic narcissist
human.
Kind of.
Yeah. Like, there was a time when I was hanging out with my ex-girlfriend's family, and we had gotten our order, and it was missing one burger.
Yeah.
And she had, like, my ex-girlfriend's mom had a complete breakdown. Like, screaming at McDonald's staff about this one missing burger.
Yeah.
And that was what I started getting flashbacks to from The Bear.
like the kind of situation where it's like, all it took was like, hey, we're missing this thing. Can you please replace it? And then she took that personally.
And it's a nightmare for everyone.
Oh, no. I don't know if I've ever told you about the time where I had to endure about a 20-minute argument from my friend at Denny's because... over his, and this phrase is burned into my soul, fluffy buttermilk pancakes.
okay.
Because he ordered some sort of slam, and the waitress, not thinking, asked what kind of toast he wanted, and him, not really paying attention to what the option was just gave her a toast order, totally normal. And then she's like, oh, it doesn't actually come with toast, so... it comes with these pancakes. He sat there waiting for his pancakes for a while and then asked her what was going on. And then she's like, oh, yeah, I didn't realize that it didn't actually come with toast. It just came with the pancakes. So I just subbed your fluffy buttermilk pancakes for some toast. And he would not let that stand. He's like, how is that my problem? I didn't say I wanted to do that substitution. I didn't know that you were substituting it for me. You should have come back to me and explained it, and I want my two fluffy buttermilk pancakes. And
wow,
hammered on this for 20 minutes, getting the manager involved until they finally were like, just give him his two goddamn pancakes. And he's like, great, bag him up, I'm taking them home.
I think, yeah, like I've definitely had like some Karen moments.
Yeah.
In my life where like somebody has like flown off the handle. I think the thing that specifically reminded me about Donna from The Bear was like the weird sadness and like the apparent lack of appreciation everybody else had for this moment.
Oh, right? Sure.
Like, we're all looking at this like she's acting like a complete psycho. And she is wondering why we're not better appreciating the fact that she's just stood up for her rights.
Right. Yep. Yeah.
And like tears running down the face, like anger and sadness mixed. It was just, like Jamie Lee Curtis made me relive nightmares, and thank you very much for that, Ms. Curtis. But that got me thinking for our second episode of Steal Everything. Yeah. We talked about video games that would make cool like settings or ideas for role-playing games. And now I wanted to talk a little bit about like character tropes and the dynamics that you can find in shows that you can just like thief wholesale your games. Right. Have you ever done that? Have you ever just like stolen a character dynamic from a thing that you've seen?
Dynamics? No. Okay. I'll be honest. I mostly just steal character ideas because I guess I'm not familiar with like creating dynamics ahead of time. I feel like they always evolve naturally at the table.
Sometimes they do. I always like to try and think about them ahead of time, right? Like I'm that guy at the table who on session zero or early session one, if we didn't have a session zero, is like, cool. That person's my brother now. I didn't even put a last name on my thing so that I could take their last name. Right. And like create a built-in relationship for my characters. Because I feel like there's a tendency to show up to the table with a character as though they were born that minute. Right? Like they don't really have a history. They don't have relationships with the other people around the table. You popped into existence fully formed at the inn. And now the old wizard is going to give you all a quest and we're going to figure out who our character is through this experience. Right?
Okay. I see what you're saying, but I feel like a lot of that, like when I have a new character showing up, it's that they are kind of like a stranger in a strange land or whatever. Like they've got a history. They've got, you know, things that help define them. It's just not related to anyone at the table. And then we are put together by, you know, happenstance, chance, whatever.
Right. For the game that I'm in right now, I actually imposed a character dynamic on my players. So in Eberron, the big thing that happened in the background of Eberron is we've just finished the last war, right? And it's the equivalent to World War I. It changed the entire political dynamic. Everything is different now. And everybody's approach to war is, again, like similarly changed, where before war was like this big heroic thing that you went marching off to with your buddies. Now everybody's like, war fucking sucks.
Now that everyone has had a taste of war, they're like, oh, that's horrible.
Well, and that specific type of war too, where it's just like, wizards are tearing the skin off of people and that guy just turned into an alligator.
Yeah.
And like, we're digging a trench that we've been in for the last 35 days. And every once in a while it rains literal acid into the trench. Right. So like, that whole thing is really fundamental to the setting of Eberron. And so I decided that our crew was going to be a bunch of veterans who had served together.
Okay.
And that worked out well. They created their relationships. They have their dynamics. Every once in a while, I'll bring in a character who they know from the last war. So like their old lieutenant showed up in one of the later sessions while we were still in Sharn. And I find that that kind of thing adds a bunch of depth to the world that you wouldn't have had otherwise.
Yeah. In a similar vein, have we ever discussed the All Guardsmen party and the sort of Darwinian character creation that campaign wound up using?
Was that one with the 40K thing? Where you were just like grinding through characters over and over again until you found the crew that you ended with.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We talked about that, I think, during our 40K episode.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And just the idea of like creating those bonds. In your case, you know, you've created these war bonds between characters, but like in this case, they've actually managed to manufacture those bonds between the players, which then expressed itself through the characters.
Well, and I feel like there was some of that happened in our campaign too, where I unceremoniously killed everyone.
Yeah.
And then starting fresh, we're all veterans. And so may have carried over some sentiment, a little bit of like having been in the shit with these people.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's a lot of different things that I'll steal from. So like part of the thing that I was thinking about when I was looking at this character dynamic was actually MASH.
Oh yeah.
Right. Just a bunch of people who are stuck in circumstances that they can't control in a weird place that is incredibly hostile to them, both like physically and psychologically.
Right.
And we didn't end up like doing war stuff with this one, but like the dynamic that I was imagining was like the crew after MASH, if they had decided to stick together.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Right. And, that kind of helped shape some of our early games and like the character types, like the character tropes that I was introducing because of that. And so, yeah, I was thinking we could go through some of our favorite shows, to steal things from, and see what we can get out of that.
Sure.
So the first one, I'm going to let you drive because I've just done a lot of talking. Let's talk about Firefly.
Okay, let's talk about Firefly. Now, I will preface this by saying I'm kind of over Firefly. I don't want to call myself like a contrarian, but I'm definitely the kind of guy who, like, when something is too beloved for too long without enough body behind it, I dismiss it. That being said, I watched Firefly late and could appreciate the unique dynamic of a bunch of people existing on the outskirts of legality with each other.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of interesting dynamics in the show, and not a lot of other shows have combined so many different crew dynamics in the same place. I mean, you've got husband-wife duo, you've got, you know, your typical charming leader, but who's got a weakness for someone, you know, who used to be a member of the crew, things like that. You've got the typical abrasive, you know, manly man type. There's even like the weird relationship between Kaylee and the doctor with his like simping. You don't see a lot of other shows that have simping as part of the crew dynamic.
I mean, sometimes you do, but it's never as charming. I think one of the things that I really liked about Firefly is you can kind of see a lot of character dynamics in pairs.
Yeah.
Right? Like, my favorite grouping in that is anytime we see Mal and Jane together. Because they do not like one another.
No, they don't.
And it's clear that they do not like one another. They have an understanding, but their relationship is incredibly antagonistic in a lot of spaces.
They are what has been called workplace proximity associates.
And like, it's interesting looking at it from like a tropes place as well. Cause you've got your charming leader, right? You've got the leader of the, what do they call that? The five-man band.
Yeah.
And then Jane seems like he would be the guy that would be in the Lancer spot.
Right.
Right. He's the one that is like abrasive and like generally doesn't like what the leader is doing. But when the leader is down, he's the one that steps up.
Yeah.
Except we never saw Jane do that.
No.
So he's always just kind of a whole shit. Time. And like when he's given opportunities to do that, he continues to be a dickbag.
Yeah. So, like, he seeks them out.
Yeah, it was an interesting trope inversion for me to see like that character dynamic playing out and then getting tossed on its head a little bit. But yeah, like the doctor and his sister.
Yes.
Really cool dynamic. the weird relationship and antagonism that forms between Jane and River.
Yep.
Right, where, like, from pretty early on, we know that Jane is perfectly happy to sell her up the river.
Yeah.
Pun unintended, but I'm keeping it. And she's just like, I can kill you with my brain. Right. Yeah.
Like, it's nice that you think that way, but I will murder you.
And then I think the romance is one of the better executed that I've seen in a single season between Mal and Inara.
Yeah.
Where, like, it is believable the tension that they have. Yes. And Mal being a man of God and, like, not wanting to be immoral despite having a person who is engaged in prostitution on his ship.
Right.
And also being awkwardly attracted to the person who is doing prostitution on his trip, on his ship.
Right.
Like, all of that really works in the favor of, like, creating cool and interesting dynamics and scenes.
Yeah.
So, absolutely brilliant. A masterclass in, ensemble casting, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And, like, not to...
The evidence there is just in how much it resonated with people, right? Like,
yeah,
you know, we still have, like, for a show that had one season and kind of a movie, like, the fact that people still today discover it and are like, oh, I'm a brown coat, and you're like, oh, okay, cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, it's yeah, you know, it is a bit of a tragedy that we never got to see more of it, but at the same time, like, man, what a way to just, like, hit the nail on the head and go out, leaving people wanting more.
Yeah, just, like, threw the mic on the stage like a grenade and bounced.
Yeah.
And, like, not to put too much respect on Joss Whedon's name right now, because he's
apparently a kind of a
dickbag. Yeah. It's a thing he's really good at. Right, his, like, a lot of dynamics? His shows. His character dynamics in his shows are really, really good. Originally I had Buffy the Vampire Slayer on our list. We're not going to get too deep into it, because I don't want to do that, but, like, absolutely one of the best ensemble casts that I have seen in television.
Right.
And their dynamics are fucking choice. And then, like, even the fact that he was able to pull something kind of miraculous out of Avengers.
Yeah. Especially for it being, like, the first time they were doing that.
Yeah, and, like, my son and I recently went back and watched all of the Marvel movies that don't suck. And Avengers, I don't think it holds up as well as I thought it would.
No, definitely not. But.
But it's ridiculous it happened.
Yeah, and to put it in context, like, that was amazing for the time.
Yeah, yeah. Did I tell you that Endgame made him cry?
Oh
yeah, yeah. He and I were both waterworks by the end of that one.
Our precious boy.
Yeah, just he's such a weirdo sometimes that it's nice to see, like, glimmers of empathy.
well, and I mean, like, not to discount the emotional impact of Endgame, because I mean, especially for a lot of people like you and I, by the time we hit Endgame, I mean, we've been living with these characters for, like, 15 years, right? Like,
yeah.
And you know. Yes, there were genuinely, like, well-done characters that you came to love. So,
well, yeah, I understand. Over the course of a year.
Yeah.
Right, so, like, it didn't have the many years build up, but, like, as far as, like, the amount of time in his life so far.
Yeah, it was right, 10% of his life.
Yeah, we just threw 10% of his life into these movies, and it had a lot of impact. It was neat to see. How do you feel about The Good Place?
I have such mixed feelings about The Good Place. There were times when The Good Place was brilliant, and I loved parts of it. I loved the ending of The Good Place.
Yep.
I thought that was one of the best endings in TV history.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, I have a low tolerance for, like, sitcom-y sitcoms. Does that make sense?
Yep.
And that show was a very sitcom-y sitcom sometimes.
It got there occasionally, yeah. Like, as you were saying, like, that you had mixed reactions to it, my head immediately went to everything involving the, like, court.
Yes.
Episodes. And the fact that it wasn't a scene, it was, like, several episodes in the court. Exactly. I was just like, cool. We could have shortened that to, like, 15 minutes. Yeah. Yeah, no, it definitely had some spots where it just, like, dragged things out for setting up sitcom jokes.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so I definitely see what you're talking about there. And, like, a few places where it just kind of lagged.
Yeah. But overall, I think it's a pretty well-done show. There are definitely, like, overwhelmingly, the characters are likable.
Despite being shit heels.
Yes, despite being shit heels, they are likable.
In fact, slightly because they are shit heels.
Yes.
They're likable. So, like, the thing that I have written down here, and the thing that I thought was interesting about The Good Place as far as, like, character dynamics is concerned, is that part of the reason that I like the show is because all of the main characters suck.
Yes.
As
in different
people.
Ways, yeah.
Yeah, in very different ways, but, like, they're all insufferable.
Yeah.
And they're all also earnestly trying to become better.
Is Jason trying to become better?
He is, yeah.
Oh, you're right. You know what? As his relationship with what's her name progresses, yeah, you're right.
Yeah. Like, he is definitely the slowest in more ways than one. but he does eventually become a better person and, like, actively does want to be a better person. He's just, you know, a little different in his direction for how to do that. Like, he's less studious about it. But, like, that, I think, is the key to the show, is, like, yearning to become better people.
Right. It's a very human sort of idea.
Well, and one of the other, like, shows that we were floating for this was It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Right.
And that show is kind of the opposite of The Good Place. Like,
shitty people getting worse.
Yeah, shitty people who are actively getting worse as quickly as they can.
Yeah.
and I feel like part of the reason that I like The Good Place better than I like It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia is because of that yearning to become better people.
Yeah, I don't look at it that closely. I definitely prefer It's Always Sunny, but I don't think that's because, like, I like shitty people. you know, I just think, I just think the show's funnier. Like, I don't know, sue me.
I can't watch it.
You can't? Oh, that's too bad.
So
I understand. Like, I have a low tolerance for, like, cringy type humor too, or cringy type situations. But that show, for some reason, I don't have a problem with.
I don't know if we've ever talked about it with the mics on, but, like, my tolerance for cringe humor is so fucking low.
Yeah.
Like, I cannot watch an entire episode of The Office.
Oh, yeah.
Without having to pause it several times and, like, get up and put my hands on top of my head and, like, breathe deep and just, like, take a lap and, like, calm myself down from the secondhand embarrassment that I am feeling from that show. It is absolutely brutal. And It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. I have heard that I should just skip to the beginning of the second season.
Right.
I have difficulty doing that. And so I have tried a few times to start from the beginning of the first season. I just can't fucking do it, man.
Yeah, I feel like the show gets easier to handle because it gets more absurd. And it's easier for me to be like, oh, this isn't, like, real life. And I don't feel that same high cringe secondhand embarrassment factor. Because I definitely feel that as well in things, is that secondhand embarrassment. That I that's why I cannot watch I Think You Should Leave.
Right.
For, like, more than about 3 minutes at a time. I think the show is brilliant. I think some of the bits are some of the best I've ever seen. I can't watch it. I can't do it. I can watch clips. I can watch maybe half of a skit, but the real value of that show comes from sitting in and living in those situations for a long time. Ugh. And I can't do it. Ugh. I just can't.
What's that show that Nathan Fielder did?
Nathan For You.
Yeah. Can't do it.
Yep. Yep.
Can't fucking
Same
do
problem.
It.
Same problem.
And yet I have no problem with Borat for some reason.
Borat's fine for me because I feel like the people that he picks on kind of deserve whatever's happening. But I can't do like, what's the other one he did? The like bad gay stereotype.
Bruno.
I can't do Bruno.
Oh, okay.
Cause like, Borat, I think, I can't do Bruno.
I think Borat is such a caricature in my head that I can separate myself from him when he's doing incredibly embarrassing things. Whereas like the characters in It's Always Sunny, especially that like first season, are kind of grounded.
Yeah.
And I have been people like them, which I mean, maybe I shouldn't be admitting on the air. But like I've dabbled in being a douchebag. And so, yeah, like seeing that on the screen, just, oh man, sets off.
Here's,
every
here's what I'll say.
Head.
Any semblance of them being grounded characters goes completely out the window.
I mean, good, but I don't know if I'm able to suffer through any of it to get there.
All right, fair. At any rate, let's move on to a show that doesn't make us feel the ick.
The Big Bang Theory.
Oh, okay. Other people have said it. I will reiterate this, but it is nerd blackface.
It is the worst. I absolutely hate that show. I have, and like, not for cringe reasons. It's just because it is deeply, incredibly unfunny to me.
Oh, there's no part of it that's funny. And then having to endure people who know me and purport to love me being like, ah, you're just like those guys. I'm like, I'm not though. Like, could you please stop saying that?
Super not those guys. They are.
Yeah.
Not a good representation of nerds. On the absolute opposite side, and the one that I think gets touted as the answer to the Big Bang Theory, though, Community.
Yeah. Community is, I've watched all of it. It's a roller coaster in quality, but overall, with the exception of one person, there's a lot of really great group dynamics on that.
Even with Pierce.
Yeah.
Like, he's very obviously the odd man out through the early seasons.
Right.
And then they just get rid of him entirely later on. But, like, the fact that he is there, I feel, is important. Right? Like he does bring something to their group dynamic.
It's something, all right.
Like, in an antagonistic position. Right? Like, he isn't there to make the group better.
No.
He is actively making it worse.
Right.
Despite wanting desperately to have everybody like him.
Right.
And I do think that Pierce could make an interesting character, actually. Like, the one of the options that I had on here for like character dynamics is like, if you had an aging wizard that has Pierce's shitty attitude, like he's just kind of vaguely racist. He's
not vaguely.
Well, yeah, not vaguely. Like, sexist, holding on to, like, a lot of older, like, attitudes about morality and social norms. Or even just, like, an elf. Like, pick a young, beautiful Pierce and just, like, roll that into your party. That would be incredibly difficult to play without it warning everybody. I think it would be better as a surprise, though. just like my elf character is actually just a dickbag.
Yeah, he's 1,000 years old and acts like someone from 1,000 years ago.
Yeah,
same opinions on like women and minorities.
He actually remembers when dwarves were slaves.
Yeah.
keeps talking to the halflings as though they are a servant class. Yeah, just
yeah, yeah, like yeah.
I think there's something there. Even if that's just like an NPC.
Right.
I think that would be brilliant. But like every other character in this show, it kind of doesn't even matter where you put them.
Right.
They'd be great.
And you do throughout the show, like that's one thing I love about a good ensemble show, is that they will do episodes that let you show the different dynamics within the group and their own strengths and weaknesses, right? Like the easy pairing is Troy and Abed, but what about the episode where it's like Abed and Becca, or Abed and Britta? Like,
I think my favorite for that is actually Abed and Jeff.
Yeah.
Having that dinner.
Yeah.
Where Abed isn't acting like Abed. He's acting quote unquote normal.
Yeah.
And is just like breaking down his own character in a very meta way.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, without having all of the context that leads up to that, might fall a little flat in your game, but like if you've been playing for a long time and you have one of your characters actually sit down and be like, look, laying it out on the table, this is who I am.
Yeah.
Right. And it's just like an absolutely pitch perfect breakdown of who they are. And then they just go back to being that person.
Yeah. Yeah. No, this is not a mistake. This is a carefully cultivated.
Yeah. So good.
Defense mechanism or whatever. Yeah.
And just like, imagine a character like Abed in any fantasy role, right? Like you make him a bard and he has the hyper fixation on like performances and songs.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, he's clearly wizard coded, but
he is very obviously wizard coded. But there like isn't a spot you couldn't put those character traits.
Right. Yeah. Right.
And that's true kind of across the board, right? Like there you could do Jeff Winger as a wizard.
Oh, 100%.
You could do Jeff Winger as a bard. That's probably where he makes the most sense. Yep. But you could also throw him into like a sorcerer role or a barbarian. It would actually be really funny to see him as a barbarian.
As a warlock, with the dark patron.
That is the law. Yeah. No, it's so good. And also, like, they did two D&D episodes, which are, to date, the best representations of Dungeons and Dragons in television media. And I am including Stranger Things in that.
I'll come out right now and say Stranger Things is some of the worst.
I think Stranger Things really captures my experience being a shitty teenager playing D&D.
Okay.
It doesn't do anything for the game since I've become an adult.
No.
But like the first scenes of the first show, like the first season, where it's just like, I don't remember any of the characters' names. It's been years since I've watched it.
Yeah.
So the fucking main kid. Yeah, the DM kid.
One without teeth, whatever.
Yeah. The one with teeth, the DM kid, is just like, and now you're facing a Demogorgon. And it was just like, cool. That guy has obviously run out of story. And he's just throwing an encounter out because he doesn't
know what to do next. Now there's a monster. Yeah, because he's like, well, this is the coolest thing I could find opening up the DMG.
Yeah, is this an appropriate challenge level for my characters? It doesn't fucking matter. That didn't exist in second edition. Let's go.
Yeah. Who cares? I want to fight the demons.
Yeah. A community did an absolutely brilliant job of creating a narratively compelling version of D&D for the screen. It wasn't 100% accurate. Never is. But
I think with the concessions that they made, it's fine. Like, people forget that tabletop hobbies don't always directly transport to something translate to something watchable on television. Like,
they almost never do.
Yeah.
Like
have you ever seen a TV show trying to like give you the essence of people playing Magic the Gathering?
Oh my god. Okay, there is one that has done it well.
Who did it well?
Adventure Time.
Don't say Yu-Gi-Oh. Oh, okay.
Adventure Time did it well.
Okay.
There are a few things in the first episode of Card Wars. There's two Card Wars episodes that really sold me that these people play Magic.
Okay.
The first is that, like, Jake is bored and busts out Card Wars and wants to get Finn playing. And Finn's like, hey, BMO, do you want to like play Card Wars with us? And as BMO is like skateboarding away, he's like, I do not play such games with Jake. Just like skateboards away. And I'm like, yeah, there's some animosity there. That I see what happened.
There's a story. There's
yeah. And then
something happened. Yeah.
Like they do a bunch of like the shitty terminology so well. So like instead of tapping, they call it flooping. Because it makes exactly the same amount of sense to somebody who's never played this fucking game before. And just like esoteric rules that don't make any sense, and Jake busts out this ridiculous combo that takes forever to run through, and then like at the end of that whole combo where he's like maniacally laughing, Finn is just like, cool, I floop the pig, and that like cancels the whole fucking thing.
And that has happened at every commander table ever, like
every single one of them. And it was if you haven't watched the Card Wars episodes of Adventure Time, you fucking have to. It's so good. No other media has ever done it well. And like, can you even imagine somebody trying to put like Twilight Imperium on the screen?
The closest I've seen is people doing like shitty versions of Catan, and then it's like, oh, cool, like the shittiest board game ever. Not like that's not true, but you know, they can't even get like the most overdone simple Euro game correct. Imagine them trying to show you 8 hours of complex strategy that gets undone when one person gets eliminated after the 6 hour.
Somebody needs to make a TV series, like an entire series of one long board game. And just like
I have it. I gotta figure it out. They do Scythe.
Okay. So we play Scythe, and like all of the character dynamics that are happening, all of the chatting and like the history and the drama and stuff is happening while this fucking game is being played.
Yep.
Yeah.
And the reason I chose Scythe is because the aesthetics and visuals would have been incredible.
Perfect. I was in my head, it was just Catan.
Scythe is alternate history 1930s, except where like every other form of war military technology has gone into big fuck off robots and zeppelins.
Perfect. I love it.
It's steampunk robo zeppelins in Europe fighting over, you know, European ground, whatever. Anyways, it would have been great.
Anyways, the moral of the story is the community did D&D well. Stranger Things did it okay for like 17-year-old Christopher.
Yeah.
Most things do it worse than both.
Yeah, a lot worse.
But yeah, no, I feel like Community is probably one of the best ensemble casts to like steal characters and character dynamics from.
Yeah.
Just like Jeff and Annie, right? They had that like weird romance fling.
Yeah, will they, won't they, kind of whatever.
And then that turned into shooting each other in the paintball episode. Like, just so many interesting character interactions happen in that crew that you can steal absolutely any of them.
Yeah.
I do have Stranger Things on here, but we're not going to do that.
I don't know enough about their dynamics on the show.
So you added a note that says fucking Star Trek, every one of them. And there is a reason it wasn't on the list.
It's the reason that you didn't think of it and I'm a genius?
No. If you look at Battlestar Galactica on the list, it says, I went with this because it's more down to earth than Star Trek The Next Generation. Bam. No,
but we're not talking about down to earth shows. We're talking about good character dynamic show.
Yeah, and one of the things that I find kind of not down to earth about the Star Trek franchises is that the interactions between characters in Star Trek tend to be operatic. Right? Like, Star Trek is an opera. The interactions between characters are either incredibly robotic or very overblown. And it works because Star Trek is an operatic show, right? Like, it very much is in the vein of theater in a lot of ways, right? Like, even if you're just looking at, like, the Next Generation set, right? It looks like something that you would see on a theater.
I guess what I'm struggling with is, like, why is that a bad thing when you're talking about fucking role-playing games?
It's not a bad thing. I feel like it isn't very nuanced, is the thing.
Do you think D&D is nuanced?
The way I play it.
What? That's definitely not rules as written, then.
Rules as written. Be as bold and...
be as melodramatic as possible.
Yeah, your direction, your character direction will always just be, give us a little more.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, unironically, yes. I don't know.
That is true for a lot of tables, I guess.
what are we talking about here?
That is not a stage direction anybody has ever given me.
Be more... yeah, okay.
Yeah, hey, Christopher, can you give us a bit more? It's like, no, you need to scale that back. By, like, a lot.
Could you give us less?
Yeah, just less of you would be great.
But no, on the real, like I feel like D&D is, for the most part, played pretty fucking dramatically. So to say, like, oh, these character dynamics lack nuance is like, what are we talking about here?
I think the bigger thing for me is the roboticism of a lot of the stuff that happens in Star Trek. Yeah. Right? Like, when you're on the bridge and you're just relaying information. I mean, yeah, there is one that is just a robot. Two robots?
At least two. There's Data.
At least two robots. Okay. Like, you have people who are relaying information very robotically. It is not providing any real character information while they're doing that. Right, like, if you've got Geordi at the helm and he's just, like, relaying the information that he has to the captain, then, like, you don't learn anything about Geordi in that interaction.
Not in that interaction, but, like, when they go on the away mission and they get stuck on the alien planet because someone
forgot
the something, like, there's tons of that shit.
The reason that I defaulted more towards Battlestar Galactica is because those through lines run through the whole show.
Well, that is the whole show. There's nothing right, to the show other than that.
Yeah, it's a lot of, like, character interaction. I think Battlestar Galactica as a whole is not as good.
Right.
Like, that, there were some things that it did very well, especially in the early seasons.
Right.
That set up characters in some very interesting ways. Mm-hmm. And then they kind of flubbed the big reveal.
Right.
And just kind of, like, skidded to a stop at the end. But,
yeah,
like, the...
I actually don't know what the big reveal was because I didn't watch it at all.
Okay, I'm not going to spoil it for you.
I'm not going to watch it.
Not out of respect for you, but out of respect for our listeners. I'll spoil shit for you all day. Yeah.
Is Odama the Romulan the whole time? Romulan? No, that's not right. That's
just Romulans top to bottom is the big reveal. It's like we thought this was going to be, like, a robot problem. It is not a robot problem. It is a pointy ear mad elf problem.
It's the jerk Vulcans. Oh, no.
Yeah. Angry elves with disruptors. Yeah. But, like, the character interactions that we saw there, like, Adama and his kid were great.
Oh, he's got a kid? Look at that.
Yeah, and his kid is, like, one of the fighter pilots in the series. Adama and his first officer is a drunk. And, like, the relationship that they have with one another is often strained by that, as well as just, like, the authority that is there. And, like, I think the thing that I wanted to highlight with both Battlestar Galactica and Star Trek is that, like, you can create game dynamics using authority in interesting ways. Right? Like,
I say counterpoint. Like, who else has a son? San Francisco. So that's a great character dynamic.
You know who else has a son?
You.
Worf.
That's true. Worf has a son, and it's a complicated relationship.
Is it? Yeah. When's the last time he saw Alex?
They did lots of stuff, and Alex went kind of weirdly down like a fundy path, and his dad was like, "Hey, man, that's not cool."
Okay.
Yeah, sometimes you have to ward your kids away from religious fundamentalism. Okay. Job as a parent.
I'm just saying there were long stretches where Alexander did not show up ever.
Yeah, but there's, you know, lots of other people to worry about. This isn't the Worf show.
The entire Picard series, they don't even mention him.
Because it's called Picard, not Worf.
Worf is in the last season. He's one of the main characters of the last season.
I know he is, not his son. I don't know. Again, the show is about Picard. I don't think Picard had much of a relationship with Alexander.
No. But they did do a lot of discussions about things like legacy and like Geordi and his kids, and like there was a lot of like parental coded stuff that was, oh, and fucking Picard and his kid.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, Picard is sitting there with his kid, and Worf is just standing there fucking awkwardly in the corner.
Don't bring up Alex.
I don't understand.
I mean,
why are they making this complicated? Just send your child away.
Just let your child become a religious extremist, and you'll never have to talk to him again because he'll die in some sort of holy war. In Worf's defense as a father, I think that show forgot a lot of things that had happened in Star Trek.
Yeah.
So, like,
no, maybe he just didn't get
the opportunity to bring up how well his son was doing at Space MIT or whatever.
Yeah. I don't want to disparage the relationships in Star Trek, because like anytime that they're not doing starship shit, it's great.
Yeah.
Right? Like the relationships are very dramatic. They are very overblown. They are very operatic in the way that they're presented, but not in a bad way. Right? Like out of the two of them, I generally prefer Star Trek.
Kiko's just genuinely worried about O'Brien's relationship with his daughter that he never sees.
Yeah. But Battlestar Galactica also has that like through line of who is the fucking enemy.
Right.
That you don't have in most of Star Trek.
Well, for sure, because that's not what Roddenberry was trying to do with Star Trek. Now, I would say like everything that Battlestar does was basically like Star Trek would do that in a single episode. You know?
Yeah, I think that a lot of like the character development was different enough. Like the ones that I'm thinking about in particular are like the fighters, right? Mm-hmm. Like the people who were manning the fighter ships. Because like you don't have those in Star Trek. Right, like the battles in Star Trek are like big ship battles. You don't have
it's all
robots.
Capital ships, yeah.
Yeah. Where in Battlestar Galactica, it's a lot of like fighter on fighter dogfight action. So like you have some differing relationships there with like people who their whole job is to get in fights.
Right.
And then you like there was a much bigger focus on the engineering crew and like their relationships both with each other and like the fighters because they're servicing those ships and with the rest of the fleet. Mm-hmm. And then there's like the politics that are happening on top of that. So like I found that the character dynamics in Battlestar Galactica were initially more compelling. Mm-hmm. Whereas like, I don't know, everybody just kind of gets together for a poker game in Star Trek. Like
that's every once in a while they get together to play poker and pretend to be Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah, and like every once in a while you get into a situation where like Data pushes Worf off of a ship in while they're all dressed up as fancy pirates or whatever.
Right.
Like there is that. And I'm not taking any of that away. It's just I found that the initial setup for Battlestar Galactica was a little stronger.
Well, and maybe that just comes down to like pacing. Because, like, Star Trek series, like, I think, without exception, anticipate that they're going to be running for a fairly long time. And so they've got time to build these relationships, like, in essentially, like, a vignette form, where it's like, hey, this is the relationship episode. We're going to do, like, two of these or three of these a season. And so with Battlestar, that was kind of the whole thing, and they knew they were only doing so many seasons anyway. So it's like, well, guess what? That's going to be 90% of the show.
Well, and so, I think that with Battlestar as well, like, that was the beginning of the prestige TV movement, where it was like, this isn't going to syndication.
Yeah.
Right? We don't have to have self-contained episodes where we know where things are at the beginning, we know where things are at the ending, right. Everything is nicely wrapped up, right? Yeah. So there were, like, a lot of continuing relationship plot lines that were happening that, like, did happen in Star Trek, but they were a lot more subtle, and they would build on each other in smaller ways.
Where, well, and like you said, they had to be more self-contained. Like,
yeah.
The lesson learned or the relationship change had to happen within 42 minutes, you know?
Yeah. And I honestly think that, like, in a role-playing game context, that might be better.
Right.
Right, because you are looking at a very potentially long form of media where these character relationships are going to build slowly. You don't necessarily want them to, like, explode within the first year, because this is a game that could go on for, like, 2, 5, 10 years.
Yeah.
Right, so. No, all right, you've converted me. You've converted me to the Star Trek way of thinking. Get out of here, Battlestar Galactica.
not
Cylon
the
was you the whole time.
Not the Battlestar Galactica has done anything wrong in the relationship building section, but yeah.
It absolutely did. The later seasons of Battlestar are just a fucking mess.
Yeah.
They suffered from the writer's strike pretty bad.
Oh, yeah.
Writer's strike 1. I don't know how many we're going to have by the time we publish this. But
we're on the third, aren't we?
Is it the third writer's strike?
I don't know. There's so many strikes.
I think there's still an actor's strike. Like, I think SAG-AFTRA is still striking over voiceover rights for video games.
Oh, okay. Last I checked, they were striking about, like, residuals for digital content.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think that's probably the same thing, and I just got it conflated.
Yeah.
And then there's also, like, the AI thing where they just, like, stole Scarlett Johansson's voice for a minute.
Yeah, that's a wild one.
Yeah, like, what a weird fucking situation to be in on Scarlett Johansson's side.
Yeah.
But, like, also, she fucking sued Disney and won. Like, you don't want to go for her.
No, she is not the person I would have picked a fight with.
No. You don't take down the Disney killer. That, goddamn.
Speaking of voices, rest in peace, James Earl
Jones. Rest in peace, James Earl Jones. May the force be with you always.
Okay, so what do we want to tackle next? We jump down to Star Trek. We got some time. What are we thinking?
We got a little time. We could talk about West Wing if you want to talk about American politics for a minute.
I don't want to talk about American politics for a minute. Let's talk about a show with less serious character dynamics that still wound up being, you know, emotionally resonant. Scrubs.
Right. Scrubs.
Scrubs, I mean, is great.
You say less serious character development, and, like, the one episode that I always go back to is the saddest fucking one.
Oh, God. Yeah, okay. That's the easy one. But again, it's the one.
The one.
The show, I think, did a great job of developing character dynamics while not having every single interaction be fucking life or death.
Right.
These are people who are friends, they work with each other, they have to tolerate each other, there's people they don't like, there's people they do like, they have to manage those relationships in a rather productive adult way, even if it's not always mature. And then, yeah, you know, they, in a Star Trek-y type way, every once in a while, an episode would come out that, yeah, definitely hit you in the feels button real hard and let you see, you know, in this particular example, a really human side of Dr. Cox. A character that up until that point had been not just like inscrutable, but just like hostile to interpersonal relationships.
Yes. Yeah. And I think like one of the things that I really like about Scrubs, and there's a reason that it's right up at the top of this list, is that I don't like Scrubs characters on their own.
Yeah.
I like Scrub characters in dynamics with other Scrubs characters.
Yeah.
Right? Like JD is kind of whatever.
Yeah.
But his relationship with Turk is one of my favorite relationships in all of television.
Yep.
Right?
It's, I mean, Jake and Turk were Troy and Abed before Troy and Abed.
Yeah. They are the relationship that I model like my behavior on for our relationship. Like that's the relationship I want. I want to be able to jump up into your arms at any point and have you catch me. so like relationship goals, 1,000%.
Yeah.
And then like the relationship between all of the residents and Dr. Cox in the early seasons is fucking brilliant. Like if you're looking for an antagonistic mentor character who is still going to teach you the things that you need to learn while standing a little bit in your way or like seeming to stand in your way is a fucking masterclass in that. Like find your own answers as a person.
Yeah, for sure. I think the best evidence for like the fact that they only really work well together is Scrubs itself. When they tried to do the new class and everyone was like, I don't give a shit about this at all.
Yeah. yeah. That kind of has the same thing that the West Wing did, where like we changed presidents and nobody cared anymore. Yeah. And also like Aaron Sorkin left. But
yeah, that was the big one.
Yeah. And like Scrubs maintained some of the same writers, but you could tell that the soul wasn't in it anymore.
Yep.
I think the big
I was gonna say the similar feel happened in Community in the later seasons with changing writers.
Yeah, and the shift around with the cast as well.
Yeah.
I think maybe my biggest detractor for Scrubs is that the first season of Scrubs is so fucking brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
And then they start to move more towards like the interpersonal relationship stuff and more away from the doctor stuff.
Yeah.
And I found both of those equally compelling in the first season.
Yeah, absolutely. Right, like,
The medical drama stuff that they were doing in the background was just as much fun for me as like the will they won't they of JD and Sarah Chalk, whose character I can't remember the name of right now.
Shit. fuck. I don't know. I forget. Anyways, yeah, no, it was coming out of the era of like ER and shit like that, having a medical drama that gave you like that type of drama, which I always liked. Like I liked House and stuff a lot. Having that like medical drama where it's then paired with like, hey, these people are actually just like kind of cool and fun to be around was really refreshing.
Now that I'm thinking about it, there are a couple of characters that I do like in isolation.
Okay. Who?
I really like Ted.
Okay.
Just like the super sad accountant that works at the hospital is forever funny.
Yeah.
You could say that I only really like the janitor in relation to JD, but that isn't true. I just kind of like him every time he's on the screen.
Oh, he's so good.
He's so good. And then the Todd.
Oh, the Todd.
I will
the Todd.
Happily take the Todd all day, every day.
Yeah.
No questions. That man, if I ever see that man anywhere, I am screaming high five at the top of my lungs and running directly at him.
I want to see his reaction. I'm sure he gets it, like, a lot.
Just a 300-pound beardy man coming trundling down an airport gangway.
High five!
Hand high in the air. High five! And if he doesn't fucking snap at the end of it, relationship over.
Not that there was one.
My parasocial relationships are actual relationships, Josh, and I would prefer that you show them the validity they deserve.
Yeah, okay. Well, I will explain that to Zach Braff.
One of my favorite things that ever happened in Scrubs was the Todd. There's a video, and you can find it on YouTube, that's just like 7 minutes of him in a banana hammock flexing. Screaming, Jesus. Yeah.
Okay.
It's so dumb, and it just lives rent-free in my head.
That's one of the dumbest things I've ever heard.
Also, the line of the Todd appreciating a dude. I think they're just like looking at a person's ass, and it's a dude okay. ass. And he's just like, the Todd appreciates hot regardless of gender. And I was just like, fuck yeah, Todd. Live your truth,
way,
man.
Way to be inclusive, Todd.
Yeah, he gives no shits. Hot is hot.
Hey, thanks for making it all the way through this episode of No Plot Only Lore. If you're looking for more, you can always find us at noplotonlylore.com and on all the very best podcast platforms. If you like what you heard today, please share, rate, and review the show to feed my never-ending need for attention and validation.